Well, good morning to y'all. You know, Suzanne and I, at first we all thought the hurricane might still be going through Georgia on Thursday, because for a while it said rain on Thursday morning. And then we thought, well, we can at least blame, if nobody comes back the second week, we'll blame it on the hurricane. And then it went through during the night and we went, uh-oh, what's our excuse? But going to be, but we're excited to see y'all. And thank you for moving up closer, because we are going to do some interaction and Q&A. So we may kind of speed through a little bit sooner, and we're going to do some sharing around the table, but it's going to be in a little bit. But I thought, you know, it's fun. I met somebody just, you know, now that has a little three-month-old, and then I've met several people this morning that's had their third baby. And, you know, so regardless if you're here as a new mom or a mom that's learning to navigate, like, more than one, you know, the whole thing, we talked a little bit at the beginning last week about just adjusting to being a mom and what's, you know, how is it for you? And you may have seen this. I saw it years ago and liked it. It's called Before I Was a Mom. See if you can relate. It says, before I was a mom, I slept in as late as I wanted and never worried about how late I got into bed. Before I was a mom, I brushed my hair and my teeth every day. Before I was a mom, I cleaned my house. Before I was a mom, I never tripped over toys or forgot words to a lullaby. I didn't worry about whether or not my plants were poisonous. I never thought about immunizations. And then I like this one. Before I was a mom, I had never been puked on, pooped on, spit on, chewed on, peed on. I had complete control of my mind and thoughts, and I slept all night. You know, and it's amazing the changes that you go through just when you become a mom. And then also, as you have multiple kids, you know, I remember I have four adult kids. Suzanne has five, and everybody's different as far as which transition is the most difficult. For me, I think it was the hardest going from two to three, because I only had two hands, and there were only two adults in the household. And so that third one, you're like, uh-oh, what do we do with that one? And the reason it wasn't harder for the fourth is we were already out of control. You know, we lost control with the third, if we even had it before then. But another funny thing about the differences, whether it's first baby, second baby, third baby, and again, you may have seen some of these, but I think they're cute. Your clothes are different. The first baby, you begin wearing maternity clothes as soon as your OBGYN confirms your pregnancy. You're so excited, like, I'm pregnant. Maybe that's not true. But second baby, you wear your regular clothes for as long as possible. And third baby, your maternity clothes are your regular clothes, you know. Preparing for childbirth, and I realize nowadays a whole lot, most people go epidural, but I've already met somebody that did natural way. You know, back in my day, that was the thing to do if you were spiritual. My girls tell me I'm an idiot. But anyway, first baby, you practice your breathing religiously. Second baby, you don't bother practicing because you remember it didn't do any good the first time. And the third baby, you ask for an epidural in your eighth month, you know. Worries. The first baby, at the first time of distress or a whimper, a frown, you pick up the baby. Second baby, you pick up the baby when her wails threaten to wake the neighborhood. Third baby, you teach your three-year-old how to rewind the swing or how to turn on the swing. And then going out is different. The first baby, the first time you leave your baby with a sitter, you call home five times. Second baby, you spend a bit of every day watching. Oh, no, I skipped. Second baby, just before you walk out the door, you remember to leave a number with the babysitter. Third baby, you leave instructions for the sitter to call only if necessary. You know, I get tickled because I work in the newborn nursery on odd months at 9 a.m. If y'all ever want to grace me, I've had some of your babies. But one of the questions we ask, because we want to do what moms want, is what's your comfort level? If your baby is crying and we're having a little bit of a challenge consoling them, do you want to be texted immediately, or do you want... We don't mind walking them if they're crying, but some moms really want to know. And so I remember, you know, you can always tell if it's the mom of the third or fourth, because they go, just call us before you call 911. You know, like, okay, we get it. But, and then I like this, at home, number of first baby, you spend a good bit of every day just gazing at the baby. Second baby, you spend a bit of every day watching to be sure your older child isn't squeezing, picking up, or hitting the baby. Third baby, you spend a little bit of every day hiding from your children. You know, and then the last one about nutrition. First child eats dirt, parents call the doctor. Second child eats dirt, parents cleans out his mouth. Third child eats dirt, parent wonders if she really needs to feed him lunch. You know, so. But anyway, it's just different. And we're all at different places this morning. And we are looking forward to just sharing a few things and then kind of jumping in on and having some time for discussion or Q&A. But before Suzanne starts in on what we're doing, I would love for you just to take a minute and just a minute to introduce yourself around the table. Just share your name and the ages of your children. You know how many children you have. So just take a few minutes and do that for us so you at least know who you're sitting by. Okay?
Okay. So we're going to start talking now. Here we go. So yesterday from my discipleship group, I just took a photograph of a part of a devotion that we were talking about the truth, and there was just the teaching was just so good. But we're also talking about peace, and this devotion, I read it yesterday morning, and it really jumped out at me. So I wanted to share it with y'all, just one paragraph out of it this morning, because I think in being a mom, there's so much cause for worry and so much cause for concern. And I don't know about you, but I felt like about most of the time I didn't really know what I was doing. I remember saying to my husband one time, I'm making stuff up. You just make something up. I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? There's so many situations that you're in that you're just kind of like, what do we do about this? And so this is just about peace. And thought it would be an encouragement to you to get started. And this is from Ruth Chow Simons, who I love, love, love. Anyway, she says, busy, buzzing, and anxious thoughts follow us because peace is not based on the circumstances we think about, but the truth we steady our minds upon. If we fix our minds on all that might go wrong, we will anxiously work to never miss a step. We will trust in ourselves, calculate every move, and worry about what we can't know. But when we fix our minds on Jesus and trust Him, we find that He gives lasting peace that He not only secures but sustains. Jesus told us that it would be unlike anything else disguised as peace from any other source. And she quotes John 14:27 that says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. And I don't share that with you to make you feel guilty because, you know, oh, if you're struggling with worry or anxiety or any of that, that's not to make you feel guilty, but it's just to tell you, turn. I think of that song, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. I can't tell you how many times in my job, because I do weddings and funerals, that I just say, Jesus, take the wheel. You know, it's like things are going crazy. It's like, Jesus, take the wheel. And it's kind of a funny thing to say, but it sort of reminds me to look to Jesus. So that was just to encourage you. Hopefully it did. And then we're going to get started on the second half of the 10 things we want you mothers, you know, we reflect on as being moms.
And I think there are little pages in the middle of the table again.
Maybe so. Good. Okay, so number 6 is to teach respect. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but this was probably my husband's number one thing. We hadn't been married very long, and we were having a disagreement, and I probably snapped at him because I tend to do that when I get frustrated. And he basically just said, we're not doing this. We're not going to do that. We will treat each other with respect. And by the way, when we have children, they will treat us with respect and we will treat them with respect. We're not going to do it. And if they wanted to get his little red wagon in a huff, all they had to do was talk ugly to me or something like that, and he was all over them like white on rice. So he definitely, that was his big thing. And Dobson one time, this focus on the family, James Dobson was the founder, he said that his entire ministry could be summed up into one word, and that was respect. It's really important that we teach our kids respect. In our society, there's such a television program sort of put down the man of the house. So many things don't have a father figure in them. So teaching our kids to respect our husbands, to respect us, to respect authority. There's no respect for authority in our thing right now, in our society right now. Police, that sort of thing, they're hated. And we need to teach our kids to respect that authority. So that's really all I'm going to say on that. Do you have anything you want to add? So see, on we go. Number 7, discipline your children. And Carol and I brought some CDs of us. We've done an entire discipline talk and an entire talk on getting your baby off to a good start. So those are back there on the table. If you want one, take one. So we're not going to go into a lot of detail on this. But what I want to say is discipline really is a two-sided coin. Corrective discipline is only one side. The other side of it is instructive. And that's really the bigger side. If you're training your children, teaching your children, walking your children, that really helps them build a foundation even more than the corrective. Now, they do need corrective. They need it when they're little, so then they kind of get it. They've got to learn to respect you and to submit to you and to obey you so that they learn to obey their Heavenly Father. That's pretty important. Don't be afraid to say no, and don't be afraid to stick to it. How many mothers do I see in the store that say to their kids, nope, we're not going to get candy today at the checkout? And the next thing you know, they're walking out with whatever candy bar they wanted because they pitch a hissy fit and they end up with whatever it was they want. So let your yes be yes and your no be no. That's a big one. We always use 4 D's. For corrective discipline, and those were dishonesty, lying, especially, disobedience, defiance, and disrespect. And those were our 4 things that we sort of held to and looked to correct. Everything else, you know, you've got to realize that some of their stuff is just childish irresponsibility. And so it's really easy when they're irresponsible with a toy and they rip the head off for the toy to go away. Great discipline right there. And then, I said this last week, but I'll say it one more time. Sorry, I can't see my paper without my glasses on. You will get there. Try to look behind the behavior sometimes, too. Sometimes there's more going on than just the way that they're acting. And that carries into the teenage years, too. I'll never forget a day Hannah got in the car. She was being so hateful to me, and I was driving her somewhere, and I said, you know, I'm doing this for you. I don't really have to do this. And she burst into tears and told me what something that had happened to her at school that day, and we were both crying. She was just taking it out on me. She wasn't feeling anything toward me, and sometimes you're the safest place for them to take things out on. So trying to look behind that behavior is helpful too. Over to you.
Well, and again, because the CD is back there, we're not going to go into detail, but I was just thinking about having babies and toddlers, since that's the age and stage you're at, that how important it is that training begins in infancy, really. You might think it doesn't begin until they're walking and talking and all that, but just that you're in charge. And with an infant, it's more the fact of you doing what you think that baby needs more than just whatever the baby seems to want. You know, you can get into our CD on baby. It's just called Baby Talk. And I used to go to a pediatrician when we moved to town. My first child was 2 months old. And the first mom I met, I said, who do I go to for a pediatrician? They said, oh, go to Dr. Denmark. I went, okay, where's this Dr. Denmark? I didn't know if it's male, female. I knew nothing. Well, I found out she was a female, and she was in her mid-80s at that time. And she practiced in an office off to the side of her home. But she was so wise. But she said, you know, that baby comes to live with you. And you are in charge. And they need to know that they can depend upon you. And so a lot of the principles that we teach, and is it biblical? Is it that's the only way? That's not what we're saying. But it is biblical to teach them to respect authority as they grow up and that you're in charge, not them. And some of the ways that is evident, even with like a small child, a baby, is when they're at that stage where they don't want to stay in your arms. you know, and they're trying to get down there bucking you. You're stronger than them at that point. You know, my youngest son stopped by the house right before I came here today, and he's 6'3" and big old guy, and there's no way I could make him do what he doesn't want to do. But when he was an infant in my arms, I was stronger than him. You know, so you just hold them and quietly say, hold mommy. You know, but don't let them just because they want to. Don't always give in to what they want. And they learn to submit. When you're changing their diapers on changing table and they're just, you hold them down and say, no, be still. You know, and that is a way of discipline. It's not just letting them rule. And so it's not done in an ugly way or anything, but you're in charge. So it's establishing that thing. And then I loved what Suzanne said about training being discipline, not just being corrective, but being training. And one of the things that we tried to do, and we even tried a little bit with our grandkids to do, but is to teach them as toddlers that some important words they need. And one is just stop, and one is come. And they need to learn to obey those words because they're running out in front of a car and you say stop and they disobey you. It might be cute when they're running in the house, but they need to learn that those are words. So we would play like the come game and the stop game. We would say, okay, let's play a game. And we'd run and say, okay, stop, freeze, stand like a soldier. And then they'd stop, you know, and then we'd say, okay, now come to mommy. I remember Randy and I had a couple of the grandkids down the playground years ago when we only had a few grandkids. And and we were trying to teach them. So I was like saying to Randy, okay, Randy, run to CeCe, you know, like pops, run to CeCe. So and he would run, but then we'd say, okay, stop. But you make it a game, but especially those words. And I would add the other word is just obey, you know, is stop, come, obey. Make it simple. But that they learn, because for safety reasons, they need to learn when they need to come to you right then, and you want them to come to you, and you're not chasing them all over. And there will be days, even if you play all the games and you do all the teaching, they will just run all over, you know. But that's where you apply the corrective discipline. And because we're not going to go into detail, but you might have the question, oh, do you believe in spanking? Because in this day and age, spanking is equated with child abuse. And we just want you to share that, yes, we do firmly believe that spanking has a place. It's in the Bible, or it went in. But we do not in any way advocate abusing your child. It's never done when you're angry, when you're out of control. It's done in privacy, with respect, with kindness, with teaching, and love, and all of those things. And sometimes it's a lot easier to do that than to drag out a punishment that lasts for days or whatever, especially as they get older. Is there a place for a timeout? Yeah. But I remember being in a grocery store, and this mom, and you know how you see people in the grocery store every aisle because you're kind of on the same, you bump into them. And this child was just pitching a fit, and all the way through the store she was saying, you better quit. I'm going to put you in timeout. I'm going to put you in timeout. I'm going to go, mom, there's no way you're going to put that child in timeout in the middle of Publix. They know that. But at the same time, you can't also administer like even a loving spanking in public these days. So that's when sometimes you have to leave your groceries and just say, okay, I'm sorry, Publix. I'll come back later maybe, but we've got to go home or do that. But just the importance of discipline. It is so much easier sometimes to overlook misbehavior and disobedience because you're tired. I can't tell you how many times I thought, can I just pretend I didn't see that? But and I also can't tell you how many times I said to my kids, I'm your mother, not your referee. Please don't, when they start their sibling stuff and getting into that, which we'll address maybe in the Q&A, but we have been given a big responsibility, and it is. And I think this is something we would both agree on too, is just try to make the no's as few as you can. Like, don't have your house so picture perfect that you drive them crazy that, no, don't touch it. No, don't do that. I mean, like, have as many yeses as you can, but the things that are no's, enforce. That's just something we would say. And then Suzanne's going to touch on this more because she was a lot better at this than I was, but teaching your children responsibility is, and it's all according to age and stage. But there are things, the sad thing is as a mom, is when they want to help you, they're no good at it. And when they get old enough to help you, they don't want to help you, you know. But train them early on. Let them help you, like set the table, pick up their stuff, put away their things, you know. Because we have 14 grandchildren, we see it differently. She has 20. But it's like different parents are different, and we're the mothers-in-law, so we can't open our mouths. But it's like I can just tell some of my kids, same ages, know how to do things for themselves, and others don't as well. And it's all what we teach them or train them. And they're all wonderful, though, you know, don't get me wrong. But anyway, teach them responsibility. They take care of their own things. They put away stuff. And I'm going to let Suzanne jump in on that.
Well, I wasn't better than her. That's not true. But I'm probably meaner than her. So if my kids, that's true. So
and you had Emily first.
Yeah, I did have Emily first. That was a major score. But, like, it was stuff like, you had to lay out your clothes at night. I'm not a morning person either. And mornings were rough as I was a child, I didn't want to create that for my children. And so basically I said every paper has to be signed at night. Every decision that we're going to make has to be made at night. So in the morning, it was just going through the motions and just doing it. And, you know, they would come and say, oh, I forgot to get you signed that. I said, gee, sorry, honey. Papers are signed at night, you know, or whatever. I just let them sort of suffer the consequences of it. So that's where I was probably meaner. But you need to be responsible. I will say I taught at Perimeter School for many, many years, and I saw a shift even while I taught, and I haven't been teaching there since 2002, but I saw a shift in parenting that I would say the parents are doing more for their kids. They're wanting to say no less. They're wanting to be friends more, and they're wanting to not teach responsibility. The best way to teach responsibility is to work alongside of them. And that is a hassle because they don't do it as well as you. It takes twice as long. But if you're working with them, I don't mind doing the dishes ever, but if you'll come and stand and talk to me, I'll wash everything in your house for you. I don't mind at all. But if you put me in the room by myself, it's like punishment. And it's the same way with your kids. If you say, go clean your room, well, number one, what does that mean? And what they consider clean and what you consider clean might be it's definitely two different things. But doing it with them to train them, and then be very specific in what you want them to do. Your job is to unload the silverware from the grocery store and put it in the silverware drawer while I'm unloading the rest of it. And y'all are talking and interacting. Kids want to be around you unless, you know, they've got something else they want to do. But they do enjoy being around you. So maximize that time and use that for training. But be clear with your expectations. Years and years ago, I was friends with this lady, and she told the funniest story, and I love to tell it. Her son, every single morning, would come down the stairs for school, and she would say, did you brush your teeth? And he'd go, oh, and he'd go back upstairs. He was in the ninth grade before he came downstairs and said, yep, I brushed my teeth. Ninth grade, y'all. Training takes time. That's just crazy. Oh, that's just crazy. The other thing is money management. That's another good thing to teach your kids. You know, everybody's got a system for how they give allowance and stuff like that or whatever. But come up with something to teach your kids to be somewhat fiscally responsible. It really will help you when they go to college. One of the favorite stories they told at UGA at orientation was there was a kid whose dad put all his money for the whole year in, and he bought a new car. Called his dad and said, Dad, I bought a car. And his dad's like, with what? With my money. Had no idea. You know, so teaching them to be responsible. You know, some people say give them a credit card at a certain age and let them pay the bill and whatever. But figure out kind of your plan. But that's another area that's important. Probably not at 2, but maybe at, you know, 12. You got something?
You know, I like chore charts. And when they were little and toddlers and stuff, their chore might be to brush their teeth or to pull up their bed, you know, their bed, or to pick up their toys, and you put stars on them, and you can come up with whatever rewards. But just, I can remember too, usually at least once a year, I would like to, tr- I would try to think through my kids, maybe even twice a year. You know, September and January are always good beginnings. I always love those months because I get to start over and do better at what I meant to do before. But I would sometimes look at each of my children and think, okay, what are they doing at this stage? What could they be doing? What do they need to learn how to do? Now with Velcro, you don't really have to tie shoes anymore. But at some point, a child needs to learn how to tie a shoe. But to brush your own teeth, to make up the bed. And I'd say, okay, we're going to work on that for this couple of months or whatever. But just, and in the past, we've handed out like what two-year-olds can do, what three-year-olds. Now you have a good friend called Google. So just Google, you know, responsibilities, age-appropriate home charts, and you'll, there's, and besides that, now there's inventions that weren't even invented back in the olden days when we were raising our kids. So, but just the main thing is teaching them responsibility and that it's a family home and we all work together. As they get older, sometimes we would put chores in a jar and you drew out what you got, or we would rotate who got this chore this week and that chore that the next week, and just be creative. But they need to work around the home. They need, because they're a part of the family, and then they can get, they can reap benefits with an allowance, but don't just always pay them for what they do, you know. Anyway, that is that. And then the next point, do you want to, you go.
Well, we were going to do the questions, but I have one more thing to say.
Oh, that's what we were going to do. Yeah. Right. Okay, we did talk about that at 9:30 last night. Sorry.
The goal is that these children grow up and leave you and go to college and they're responsible and then they self-support and you don't have to support them anymore and they don't live in your house. I love my kids and I love visiting them and all that, but yeah, that's the goal. So you got to work toward that responsibility, toward teaching them that. Yes, so questions. Two things to discuss around your table. One, challenges maybe that you're having in discipline right now with your kids. And secondly, chores that your kids are doing at different ages. So go.
And while you're discussing, like when you come up with challenges or whatever, we're going to stop early and do Q&A. So if you want to write down the question, if you don't want to ask it, or if it reminds you to ask it. But we're not really trying to solve everybody's issue around the table right now, but share just where you are and what challenges you're facing at this stage of your life.
Okay. As we talked about,
you know, Suzanne's nicer than I am, but no, I realize you could talk all day on just different issues and challenges you're facing with this topic, but we're just going to try to move this along so we'll have some time to do Q&A if you want to.
Yes, okay. So again, we learn by doing, and like we talked about in teaching responsibility, also the next one is love and serve others with and in front of your children, and taking them along to serve is just a really cool way to teach them. If you're taking a meal to somebody, letting them help you make that or letting them help you plan that meal, go shopping with you, those kinds of things are good. I've got a funny story. Dropping everything. One of my daughters lives in Orlando, and every other year they buy passes to Disney World. And she's pretty good about serving others and stuff, and she had them down at the community center one day, and they were scrubbing the baseboards in the community center, and her son, he was probably 7 at the time, looked up at her and said, "Mom, why do we have to do this? Why can't we just go to Disney World?" And she said, "That's the reason we need to do this, you know." But it's that kind of thing, them learning, seeing you serve others, and by setting an example. That's really important, to set examples, and then to actually do it is really good with them.
Yeah, and I would just agree. And sometimes as far as having people over or doing things, hospitality, think about them as toddlers and their friends and their parents, you know, or their teachers, you know, and are doing little things like that. But to do it, it's, you know, I don't know about y'all, but like on the whole service thing, being a servant, like I'm okay with being a servant when I choose to be, but I don't like to feel like I'm a servant, you know. And I remember when my kids were very, very young, Randy had taken them all somewhere one Saturday, and I'm picking up in my great room, this house we used to live in over when the church was on Spalding Drive, and I am just muttering to myself the whole way through while I pick up socks and toys and all this stuff. And I remember saying, six people live here, one person works here, you know, like, nah, 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 nah. I was just the whole time, because I was by myself, and I'm just a servant around here. And I don't know, that's just where I was that day. The next Sunday morning, I think the baby was not feeling well, so I stayed home, and the other kids were at church with Randy, and I have on my nice praise music. And I'm walking through the exact same room, singing, make me a servant, you know, like, and I thought, and it's like God just stopped me in my tracks. And I thought, wait, wasn't I just yesterday whining and complaining about being a servant? And then here I am singing, make me a servant. But the idea is that we do want to involve our children in serving other people. And then our last point, which is going to stretch into a little bit longer, but it's just on the need to make and develop friendships with women. You might think, wait, we're talking about mothering. What is this about? But you need friends. And even though you're married, you still need girlfriends. Like, your husbands don't necessarily want to hear every detail of what went on about the things. But you might have a friend that would, you know? And you want to communicate with your husband, but you don't need to, like, dump on him if that's your only adult conversation all day. I had four children. Suzanne had five at about the same time. You know, I started before she did, and she kept going after I finished. But I can remember, you know, one of us calling the other one and going, I am overwhelmed. And the other one saying, I am too. And we hung up, and that was all that was needed, you know. It was like having somebody and having multiple girlfriends and doing that, not just one girlfriend. You know, C.S. Lewis said, friendship is born at that moment when one person says to another, what, you too? I thought I was the only one. And that's kind of like our little, I'm overwhelmed, yeah, me too. Okay, you get it, you know. So, but just to do that, there is a poem that I love on friendship. So it just says, young and newly married, I relaxed under a pecan tree on a hot Texas summer day, drinking iced tea and getting to know my new sister-in-law, Estelle. Not much older than I, but already the mother of three, Estelle seemed to me experienced and wise. Get yourself some girlfriends, she advised, clinking the ice cubes in her glass. You are going to need girlfriends. Go places with them, do things with them. What a funny piece of advice, I thought. Hadn't I just gotten married? Hadn't I just joined the couple world? I was a married woman, for goodness sake, not a young girl who needed girlfriends. But I listened to this new sister-in-law. I got myself some girlfriends. As the years tumbled by one after another, gradually I came to understand that Estelle knew what she was talking about. Here is what I know about girlfriends. Girlfriends bring casseroles and scrub your bathroom when you are sick. Girlfriends keep your children and keep your secrets. Girlfriends give advice when you ask for it. Sometimes you take it, sometimes you don't. Girlfriends don't always tell you that you're right, but they're usually honest. Girlfriends still love you even when they don't agree with your choices. Girlfriends might send you a birthday card, and they might not. It does not matter one bit. Girlfriends laugh with you, and you don't need canned jokes to start the laughter. Girlfriends pull you out of jams. Girlfriends don't keep a calendar that lets them know who hosted the other one last. Girlfriends would give a party for your son or daughter when they get married or have a baby, in whichever order that comes. And girlfriends are there for you in an instant and truly when the hard times come. Girlfriends listen when you lose a job or a husband. Girlfriends listen when your children break your heart. Girlfriends listen when your parents' minds and bodies fail. I always cry on this. My girlfriends bless my life. Once we were young, with no idea of the incredible joys or the incredible sorrows that lay ahead. Nor did we know how much we would need each other. So get yourself some girlfriends. You're going to need them. And last week, for those of you who weren't here, we shared a little bit of our story, but we met when I was pregnant with my second and Suzanne with her first. But So we, and with some other longtime friends, we have raised our children together pretty much. You know, we go through the different stages, and you all have that. And then we went through the, what are we going to do about dating? Or what are we going to, I mean, starting with the potty training, and then the girlfriend, boyfriends, and then kids that struggled in high school, and going to college, and some of our kids roomed together in college, and then, oh, they're getting married, helping with weddings, helping with showers, helping with babies. How do we be a mother-in-law? Oh, they don't like me. What am I supposed to do? You know, learning to be a grandmother. What are you going to do? And then our parents getting older and walking through our parents dying and being there for each other. They're just valuable things. And I would say this. You need more than one girlfriend. And we both would say the best thing to ask yourself is, what kind of friend am I? Not like looking around like, hey, well, they won't be my friend. What? Start thinking, who can I be friends with? Don't look at the other. And then try to have multiple girlfriends. And the best quality I think you can have as a girlfriend is not to be a jealous girlfriend. Jealousy will kill a friendship. Suzanne has a ton of people that call her, like, well, number one, we never... That,
I used to.
No, anyway, but they say, but you know, and it's like, I don't even like the BFF or best friends. Who's your best friend? Does that mean everybody else is not as best? Like, you know, like, have a lot of good friends, you know? We have different friends. We have some that overlap. We don't have one group that always does the same thing, you know? But don't be jealous if your friend's going out with somebody else. Go, oh, good, y'all have fun. Because you don't want to be that kind of clingy friend that everybody's afraid to let you know if you're left out. It's just not healthy. And y'all face an additional challenge in this day and age with social media, because you don't just hear about it, you see about it. So my other caution would be careful what you document and put out there. And think about how it's going to make somebody else feel. Like, if we're doing a special trip or a lunch with, if I'm doing that with somebody, I don't want, I'm not going to hide it, but I'm also not going to broadcast it. Because it's just going to make somebody feel bad. But so try to think, how can I be a good friend? Not just, well, why aren't they my friend? You know, look at that way. Do you want to jump in?
Well, the one thing I would say, too, is, yeah, try to be a good friend. But having different friends meet different needs. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want me to help you decorate your house, you're out of luck. You know, because I'm not artistic. I'm not good in those areas. So you need another friend that will help you do that. But, you know, I'll come over and scrub your bathrooms. I'm a good cleaner. So different friends meet different needs. And I will echo that again. When your good friend goes and does something with somebody else, rejoice. So they're not just leaning on you. They've got other people they can lean on, too. Because there's a lot of trouble in this life. And you're going to walk through a lot of stuff. And so having a pool of people that each of you, that any you can rely on, is really important.
Yeah.
And this is so great to me to see this, because this is helping y'all build friendships, and I'm so grateful for it.
And friendships do take time, you know, and being willing to invest. So you do end up being friends with people whose kids are in the same age and stage as you are, because you're at the games together or the teacher meetings or parent meetings. And so, but it takes time. Andy Ashworth is an author that has a book called Real Love for Real Life. It's a great book. But she says, the challenge to consider how to use the time we're given is always before us. Life presents us with a series of one-time opportunities to show people they matter. If we let an opportunity pass, it's gone forever. The sacrifice of our time is a gift that tells someone they're valuable. Do we make time to respond to people in our everyday life, to initiate the invitation, to offer the coffee and conversation, to nurture our marriages, our children, and our friendships? And she says, I think this is good. No one is comfortable coming to someone when they feel like an interruption. And so make time for people, and it's hard sometimes to do that. So, but then you think about friendships, and you think, too, is it possible to be friends within your family and your extended family? And so we want to talk a little bit about the whole in-laws and all of that kind of stuff, because you know, and it's funny because people laugh and do that, because it's the age-old thing, y'all. But I have to tell you something. If you're a mother, this may surprise you, but you will be a mother-in-law one day. unless your children say single. And mother-in-laws get a bad rap. People don't like mother-in-laws. You know, it's kind of like, I remember when our oldest child was getting married, I went around to every young mom I knew and said, I'm going to be a mother-in-law. People don't like mother-in-laws. What do I have to do to be a good mother-in-law? Like, it just dawned on me one day, like, oh, do I turn into somebody evil because I'm a mother-in-law? And anyway, I probably ask 100 women that question, and I think I got the same answer for that. And I think I said this last week, but do y'all know what the answer is? Keep your mouth shut. Everybody told me to keep my mouth shut. They may have said it a different way, but it's just learning to navigate that, and is that possible? And I know mother-in-laws can be difficult, you know. I know. and all kinds of in-laws, you know. So, but can you be friends with them, and how do we navigate that, and what do we do? Do you want it?
Yeah, I'll say two things. One of my daughters always says, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So you have to look at it from a bigger picture thing, and the things that you do today, how's that going to impact the long-term relationship? I think that's a good way to look at it. And, you know, Carol keeps talking about mother-in-laws, but I think it's true, too, with your own mothers. You don't want their unsolicited advice either. Unsolicited advice is perceived as criticism. That's what you feel. And so I've told my kids and in-law kids that everything I do comes from a place of love. So if I don't do it right, just tell me, because I want to know that. But it's all, but know that unsolicited advice is coming from love. My son loves to tell me when I'll say, can I just tell you what I think about this? He'll say, you can talk your little head off, but I may not do what you say, but you just get that out for you. You know, he just loves to taunt me. But I mean, the reality is, it is a struggle. The relationships with parents, whether they're in-law parents or parents, changes, and it gets hard and it gets messy. But remember, you're running a marathon, and everything they do comes from love. It does, really.
And, you know, most, I think a lot is just when you're a newlywed, and then when you have kids, you're blending two families. And so talking about what it's going to be like, you know, I looked for these earlier, and I probably shouldn't say them, but these mother-in-law jokes, but they are kind of funny. Mark Twain said Adam was the luckiest man. He had no mother-in-law. Or somebody said, I wanted to be a witch for Halloween, but my mother-in-law wouldn't loan me a dress. That was bad. And that meant, you know, the best mother-in-law lives very far, very, very far away. And this one, what should you do if you miss your mother-in-law? Reload the gun and try again. You know, it's terrible.
Really?
But I do remember. I know. But I remember being in college. I was just a little college girl. And our preacher at our little college church, I just remember him saying, mixed emotions is watching your new car go over a cliff with your mother-in-law in it. And I thought, that is so ugly. So anyway, because you'll become a mother-in-law one day, and you're like, is that what people think? But I do think as you get married and as you have kids, I think it's important that you communicate. What does your family expect? What does my family expect? Especially about holidays, you know? Like maybe your family always does this special thing on Thanksgiving every year, and you all go to this place, and it's wonderful. But what does the other family do on Thanksgiving? And do you always do this? Okay, does that mean they get this holiday? But working it out. I remember our first child, Matt, and Laura got married, and they lived in Tallahassee and then in L.A. for a while before they lived here. And they, since they were the first ones, they said, and her parents lived far away, so it wasn't a matter of sharing the same holiday. You had to pick and choose. So they got on the Thanksgiving-Christmas rotation. They'd come to us Thanksgiving and Christmas with her family that year and then flip it. But they ask everybody else as they got married, would you get on the same schedule? Because we don't want to come back and y'all all be at your in-laws. You know, we want to see the siblings. So sometimes that's a way that works out. And you don't necessarily have to do that every holiday. I always feel bad. Most of my children's other sets of in-laws live in town or within an hour and a half. So they could do a holiday, lunch at our house and dinner at another. But whoever gets them second, they're not hungry and they don't want to eat. So just working those things out because they can cause conflict. But the thing that we would just share, and then we're going to move into question and answer, is with in-laws or your adult parents even, think about what you might want from them. And then I remember we were speaking one time years ago to a group of moms, and somebody asked the question. We were talking about in-laws as part of it, and somebody said they just had a new baby, and they said, you know, I want them to come. And we said, what do you want them to do for you when they come help? Well, I want them to help me cook. I want them to help them, you know, do the laundry. I want to help with the baby when it's crying. I want you with the other kids. All of those things are what mothers and mothers-in-law do when they come. But I just don't want them telling me what to do, you know? And I think we could all echo that probably. So we were with Linda Dillo, who has written a book that's back on your table. I saw she's one of my favorite authors. And she spoke at our women's retreat years ago. But we got to host her and pick her up at the airport and drive her. And she had a word for that. She said what they really want is a mute servant, you know? And you think about it. You do sometimes, you know, and you might not want to admit it, but I know I did. I want them to just come say yes, 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 but don't give advice. And is that really fair? You know, so maybe try to think of something you could ask for advice on, or you could say, what do you think about this? You know, anyway, just be real, being realistic. But it is true, not just mother-in-laws, with adult kids. And we try not to mother you too much, but it's hard because just because you walk down the aisle doesn't mean that we all of a sudden quit being a mother. You will see that. And all the veteran moms are going, yes, yes. But anyway, let's, did you have something you want to wrap up with? I wanted to just spend a little bit of time doing Q&A, and then we'll close this out. And maybe y'all don't have any questions about any of this. And if you don't, you'll just get more time to talk. But does that raise any questions anybody said on anything we said last week or this week?
I guess what I would say, one of my children was a little more on the shy side, and when we took her to college, she's walking down the hall, you know, with her head down, and I finally said, honey, you're going to have to look at people. They're going to think you're a snob, or they're going to think you're not friendly. You're going to have to look at people and say hi. So that's a good skill that you're trying to build in her, but maybe you're asking too much. Maybe just to get her to look at someone and say hello. You know, tell her that's what you require rather than, hi, I'm, you know. And just say, it's rude not to say hello. So you need to do that. If they ask you your name, you can tell them your first name. And other than that, I'm not going to make you talk. But
anybody else?
Okay, so I guess for me personally, I have a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 2-month-old. So really close together. And just how do you make this season more about thriving instead of just survival? I mean, in the motherhood aspect and also in our marriage, like, I feel like I just told Paul the other night, like, we just got to get through it. Like, we're just going to hunker down for the next 3 years and then we'll be good. And like, that just, it sounds unbearable and kind of sad at the same time. So can you
were
both
you here
speak
last
on that?
Week?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you were. It's all good questions. There is one aspect of it that you do just try to get through it. In the sense, I can remember telling Randy so many times when our kids were little, I will be a better wife one day. And then when my kids were all grown, I thought, uh-oh, I can't use that excuse anymore. I thought, oh, that worked well for a while. But I think when you describe 4-year-old, 2-year-old, newborn, that is more than a full-time job. And it is more stressful than anything. Like, and I remember hearing years ago a psychiatrist on the radio. It was a call-in station. And the question he was asking everybody to guess was, what was the most stressful job or career you could have? And people were calling in to him, brain surgeon and air traffic controller. But he said the bottom line research proved that a mother with 2 or more preschoolers at home is the most stressful job there is. And I can remember just going, yes, somebody gets it. But so to me, for where you are in this stage of life, is don't do as little as possible in any other area of your life and make your and be okay with that. It's not the time for you to take a meal to somebody or to volunteer to do something at this. You know, it's just to, because I think when we view people as interruptions, it's because we have too many things to do. And right now, that is a huge job that you have. With your husband, I think it helps if you both contribute, and date nights might look like, let's just get the kids in bed. I'm a firm believer in an early bedtime for kids, and I put them to bed at 7. Or, you know, it's easy when it's dark. It's harder when it's summertime. But where you have time for each other, and just or hiring a babysitter or getting help if you can afford to get somebody during the day to give you one day a week to get out. There's an older woman in the church that used to come up to me on Sundays and say, I say older, she was a lot younger than I am now probably, but she didn't have kids at home. When my kids were little, she would come and say, when I just had a couple, what day this week do you need me? And she'd come over one day and I would nurse the baby and run out the door, and I'd get my hair done and the doctor and the grocery, and I'd run home and nurse and run back out. But getting some help and just being realistic that it is a season you're at. They will go to school one day, and it will be easier. But during the season, have lower expectations of each other.
Yeah, I would echo that. An early bedtime is pretty critical. And one of the things Brad and I did, because we didn't have a lot of extra income, was we would do a date night once a week. And one week it was his time to plan it. The next week it was mine. It was a stay home. So once the kids went to bed, you know, we might do a meal or whatever. And that was really good, you know, sort of set a designated time for us. Now, that doesn't mean the kids are always going to cooperate, but it's okay to let the baby cry a little bit. It's okay to, it's not okay to neglect them, but it is. It's a, and it's a 24/7 job. It's a, so it's not just a full-time job. It's a 24/7 on call, on demand, all the time job. And that's a lot. That's a lot. There aren't many people in the whole world that have 24/7, 365 jobs, but moms do.
So nobody else has questions? Everybody gets along great with all your in-laws and adult parents?
I've just loved hearing some of y'all's ways that you've made teaching and learning fun, like the games, the stop come game. There was one last week that I wrote down and I can't remember. Or you saying like you acted out Bible stories and you threw all the animals on the couch or whatever. Those just made the upcoming parenting season seem like more fun and doable. So any other things that you guys can remember off the top of your head, whether it's teaching or just fun things you did to teach, I would love to hear.
I wouldn't say that this was necessarily to teach, but fun things is sometimes, we, you know, when Randy and I were newly married and when we only had a baby or something, we would still try to have a date night, whether we could afford to go out. If you pay the babysitter, we couldn't afford to do anything when we went out. But date nights. And then as we got a little bit, and it's different for us a little bit, and that Randy's schedule is such that, especially used to be, he was out a lot at night. So, but he could come home early during the day and do that, which was wonderful. But sometimes, so we tried to move to having a family night, to, you know, like if we didn't do a date night, let's have family night. And it doesn't have to be fancy or fun, but one of my kids' favorite things is we would have a mystery destination, and we would throw a blanket over them in the car, and they did not know where they were going. You'd have to have multiple blankets for all your car seats because we didn't have to do all the car seats. But and Randy would go up in a parking lot and do figure eights in the car and go, and we might end up just at the Hardee's right down the road and get ice cream, but they thought it was so much, oh, I think we're here, now we're here. And, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy life. It doesn't have to be at a big place that costs a lot of money and doing that. So
I would say try to see the humor in things, because some of it's y'all really funny. I mean, I look at some of the pictures that I see up from young moms on Instagram, and they just crack me up. And it's not funny because, I mean, your kids are covered in chocolate or paint or poo or whatever. But it's hilarious to us grandmothers. We really enjoy it. But if you can see the irony in it, too, and appreciate the little moments that you have. Also, things like just taking a walk, putting them in a stroller, and you and your husband taking a walk together with the kids in a stroller gets you talking, gets you feeling better. You know, I love that line from Legally Blonde, exercise produces endorphins. Endorphins make people happy. Happy people don't kill their husbands. You know? One of my favorite all-time movie lines. So, I mean, the truth of the matter is if you can get some exercise, you're going to feel better. So, you know, getting out and taking a walk, doing those kinds of things. Just look for as many creative ways to get what you need. Figure out what you need and what will really feed your soul. And then look for creative ways to get it. A little bit at a time. I have one friend who read a book every afternoon for 30 minutes. Her favorite thing in the world to do is to read. So she set aside 30 minutes every afternoon and read. And that was just soul giving. So searching that out.
So for me, you know, I truly believe that you have friends in different seasons of life, and I think, you know, they play different roles. And what's been the hardest part for me as a new mom is most of my local girlfriends don't have children. So that has made it, they don't understand that I can't pick up the phone all the time. They don't understand that if they call Chris and I at 3 o'clock and say, hey, let's go to the Atlanta United game. Like, we can't, you know, we want to save those emergency babysitters for, like, something good for us. So do you guys have any advice on, or do I just need to stop kind of wrestling it and realize that this season is different and there's going to be a new group that's going to play a new role? Or did you guys have any tips on successfully keeping friends that don't have children? It just... You know, it's hard because I feel guilt a lot because I don't have the time to put into these relationships like I used to in the past. I probably was a little bit, you know, the one that people called, and I just don't have time. So I don't know if you guys have any advice.
I would say, number one, your other friends, you don't know what you don't know. And many times until you've walked through an experience, you don't have any idea. They see the little baby, it lays there, you know, it needs to be changed and fed every now and then, but it's not going anywhere, it's not doing anything. They don't really understand the scope of what you're going through. They don't understand the hormones, they don't understand any of it. So wanting them, trying to explain that to them, they're not going to get it until they walk through it, and then they will. So I guess my best advice to you would be to find some people that are your age and stage. When I had my fourth child, most of the people that I hung out with had all their babies with me with my first three. And so now I'm in a whole new phase because I kept having babies. I had four and five. And most of those people, their kids were turning into school-age kids, and I still had babies. And so I kind of had to make another set of friends that sort of, I would sit in the bleachers with those people. And so I kind of had two sets of friends. Another thing I tried to do was I kind of tried to make one new friend a year. Just intentionally, God, who would you bring into my life? Because friendships do transition, like you're saying. And these people will come back into your life in a big way once they have babies, because they're going to be calling you saying, wait, what do I do about this? I never knew. Good grief, this is really hard. You know, they're going to look to you, and that's going to be a sweet thing. But in this season, I think just telling them, being honest with them and saying, it's really hard because I can't drop everything and I want to. So let's figure out creative ways for us to maintain it. And then look for some other young moms. We would meet at the mall a lot, which there aren't even malls hardly anymore, but we would meet at the mall a lot and just, you tell. But so, I mean, it was stuff like that.
I don't know why. He thought we worked at the mall. He wanted to give us the mall discount. I mean, we had kids in strollers. I'm like, okay, how could we work at the mall? But he had seen us enough that he thought that. Yeah, I think she answered that well. You just do your best to keep up, but drop the guilt. You're not at the same place they are. You know, we are so good at beating ourselves up, you know, and give yourself grace. If you've got, you know, you're doing, it's like, Lord, help me to do the best I can. And you are. And what you're doing is so important. And it is so difficult some days. Look for the joy in it, but quit beating yourself up. You know, that would be my biggest thing. So anybody else have anything? Because we can.
Okay. This is kind of going on a different track, but we go to my parents every week, and my grandmother is living with my parents because she has stage 4 cancer. But my daughter is only 2 and very, very attached to her. And so how do I explain, like, the concept of death to her? Because I know that that's going to come sooner rather than later. And I just don't know where to even start with that because she sees her every week. She's going to know she's not there, and she's super attached to her. So, I mean, we pray for her every night, but, you know, I don't even know where to start that conversation.
Good question. I would just talk about heaven and just start saying, you know, she's living here now, but she's lived here a long time, and she's going to go get to be with Jesus, you know, and heaven is a wonderful place, you know. So it becomes more, and they can still be sad and grieve, but they're in heaven now. Our grandchildren talk a lot about their grandparents that are in heaven. Oh, they're not here. They're already with Jesus. And the other day, I said something about being old to one of my little 4-year-old grandsons, and he went, "You're not old. You don't have silver in your hair." And I thought, well, if you only knew how much silver I'm covering up. But he went, "Well, you're not going to die anytime soon, are you?" I thought that's what for him. And I said, "Well, none of us know when we're going to die, but when we do, we get to go be with Jesus. And I'm hoping to be around a whole long time." But where death, I would go ahead and just, I wouldn't even use the word dying. It's just, you're changing addresses. That's really what you're doing. I love the verse, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And it's like, they've gone to be with Jesus, and one day you get to go be with Jesus, you know. And that's how I'd do it, probably.
I agree with that. My dad actually passed away in our home. And Emily would bring her kids over. She has 6 children. She would bring her kids over a lot. And he was in the bedroom downstairs. And after he died, when they come over, they're like, "Oh, yeah, that was Dick's room, but he's died. He's gone to be with Jesus." You know, they're very matter-of-fact about it, much more than you would expect.
Hi, that's really loud. I had a question regarding, like, the family relationships. Ironically, not with my mother-in-law, but my mother, we have very different patterns of mothering. I'm like my dad. My dad's like the big softy, and like, I'm emotional sharing this. I'm just like a natural born nurturer, and I'm trying to understand her coming from a perspective where that's not the way that she shows love. I had a wonderful upbringing, but I was home with Mr. Mom, and I would go do real estate with him, and my mom would work as a nurse. And ironically, I'm a nurse, so I have she has the nurturing capability when she's in a nursing environment. She's very sweet, very loving. Our patterns in mothering are vastly, vastly different. And I try to show respect. I've prayed about it since I was pregnant. And God got us through the delivery. And until my daughter was about 7 months old, we had great communication style. But as my daughter's doing more, the questions become incessant from my mother. And that wouldn't be a problem. Because like I wrote down when you said unsolicited advice, I definitely see it as criticism. And I've prayed over that, and I can see it coming from love, but even when I see it coming from love, it just heightens my anxiety because I'm constantly answering the incessant questions. So I'm just curious if you have a way to go about assisting my mom in giving her that peace, even though I can't see a way to do that from where I am right now.
I would say I don't know your mom, but I know most of the women my age, that we talk about this a lot, how do we be good mothers at this stage, want advice back. If I was your mother, what I would say to you is, I want to hear how you feel. And I remember one of my daughters was going through a hard time one time, and I would text her, and I would always put a question on it. And one time I didn't, and she said, "You didn't ask me a question." It was like a waterfall. And your mom maybe doesn't even know, but rather than put it on us, say, "These ladies came and talked today, and we talked about this," and you need to have a hard conversation and just say, "The questions are hard for me. They make me feel like I'm not doing a good job. And I know you don't feel that way, Mom." You know, give her the benefit of the doubt and encourage her and tell her how to help you. She may not take it well. You may have a big blow up. It may go really, really bad. But put it on us. Say, "These ladies, you know, we're talking about this. And here's what I gleaned from it. Unsolicited advice. This lady said this. Unsolicited advice is perceived as criticism." You know, but having that hard discussion may be the thing that makes the marathon a little easier. Because if she's asking more questions, your kids are only going to start doing more. So, and she may think she's helping.
Very. 10 minutes.
Mother-in-law's, or mother's, yeah. Because, like, my mom lived in Alabama, and so we disagreed on a few things. She was a nurse, too, you know, and stuff, but mainly with my first few, especially, you know, I didn't give them a pacifier that much. You know, they sucked their thumb, and she thought that was terrible. So when I would take a baby over there, and when she would babysit, I'd come back, and she had made a pacifier out of a bottle nipple and stuffed cotton in it, put tape over it. But I just thought, you know, she's babysitting for me, you know. She can do what she wants to do, and I can do what I want to do when I'm home, you know. And then I ended up being, Patsy is a good friend. You know, it's like, that's on our baby talk about use them sparingly. But it was just one example of she thought different than I did. And because she wasn't close by, if they're close by and they're wanting you to do things or challenging you on how you're raising your children a lot, then you do have to talk and just say, "Mom, I love you. I respect you. But I'm going to do it different from you. And you're going to have to be okay with that, you know." And there will be times that you're right, maybe, but let me fail, you know. It's a hard thing for an adult woman, older woman, to watch your children make decisions that you would not make. But we have to do it. I mean, and we all remind ourselves all the time, those are not my children to raise. They're my grandchildren. And I love my kids. I love my grandchildren. But it's not up to me to make these decisions for my kids. And But it's she's figuring it out too, probably. And just say, "When you ask me these questions, I feel like you're being critical. I don't know that you mean to be, but, you know, we are different. We're wired different, and I appreciate you, but let me be my own, you know, just communicate." You want this?
Give me that. Well, one of the things I tell myself a lot is I got my turn. And I did what I felt like was best with my children. And I got my turn. And now it's their turn. And it's their turn. And God gave those children to them because they're the best parents for them, not me. And so do my kids all do exactly what I want? No. But I did talk to a dear friend who lives out of town this morning who called. And we had a long conversation. And she told me about a situation with her daughter who she kind of said some things to her daughter that she felt like needed to be said. And her daughter wrote her a long email and just said, "You know, that really hurt my feelings." And so she went back and apologized, but she really appreciated that email. So I think your mom will get to the place of appreciation if she doesn't appreciate it right away.
And I think we probably need to close, right? Is it 11:35 and y'all have to pick up babies? But let me just pray for you if you would allow me to, and just also just to say thank you for doing such a great job. And there are so many times that I look at my grandchildren thinking, "Thank you, Lord," when those taillights, when they leave, because they're not my kids to have to go home and do all that work for, and I get to love them and enjoy them. But y'all, you do have the 24/7, so hang in there. Let me pray. Father God, thank you for this group of mothers, and Lord, I pray you would just encourage them, that you would remind them of just the importance of the role you've called them to, that you would give them the emotional, physical, spiritual strength they need in the days when the days are long and the nights are long. Lord, that you would give them wisdom, that you would bless their relationships with their children, with their spouses, with their families, extended families, that, Lord, you would help us all to learn how to live with one another and bear with one another, be patient with one another. And Lord, to do any of this, we need your Spirit, because we are sinful, selfish people, and we want our own way, and we want everybody to understand what we're going through. And so, Father, would you fill us? Thank you that you do understand us. You do love us more than anybody else in the world. And so just help us. Fill us with your Spirit and help us to be the moms that we should be, and the wives and daughters and friends. And we love you and pray in Jesus' name. Amen.